are being heard on the Zoom platform in accordance with pandemic-related court orders. The first case on the calendar today is Jalen Williams versus Sun Country Inc. and Ravon D. Eskridge versus Sun Country Inc.
I have no video.
The same procedural rules apply to this Zoom oral argument as apply to our in-person oral arguments. Each party will have 15 minutes for their primary argument, and appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Marshall will keep the time, and there's a window on your Zoom grid view showing the time. Hopefully you can all see that now. If there's any problems with the technology, the marshal will stop the time so you won't lose any time, but hopefully that won't occur today. This oral argument is being recorded by the Court of Appeals, and this is just a friendly reminder that other court recordings are not permitted except with the express prior permission of the Court of Appeals. So I'll ask counsel to identify yourself and the party you represent when you proceed with your argument. Appellant, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Zorislav Lederman. I represent Mr. Williams and Mr. Eskridge. They were both plaintiffs at the district court. They had separate actions. They were identical, arising from the same incident. They were both dismissed, and now we're appealing that dismissal. Your Honors, we have two issues here for the court to review. The first one is the preemption issue, whether discrimination claims arising under either the Minnesota Human Rights Act or the California UNRRA Civil Rights Act are preempted by federal aviation law. The second issue is kind of a minor one, whether the Minnesota Human Rights Act applies to an act of discrimination that happened within the state of California. So I'll talk about the preemption issue first, and if there's time, I'll touch on the second issue too. Your Honors, courts that have reviewed this question of whether a discrimination claim is preempted by federal law have looked at generally to Williams versus Trans World Airlines from the Second Circuit. And what that case holds is that preemption will apply unless the decision to refuse boarding is arbitrary and capricious. And various cases across the country that have looked at this issue have considered this case and the standard that's set forth there. The issue that we have here is that this is a Rule 12 motion based on the allegations in the complaint. And the allegations in the complaint, even though the plaintiffs, Mr. Eskridge and Mr. Williams, even though they were told by the flight crew that there was a safety concern, there was zero other facts to support that. And so the only reasonable conclusion they came to, and if the court looks at the complaints and reviews them within the proper standard, drawing all reasonable inferences towards the plaintiff's favor, the safety was their skin color. That was the concern.
Counsel, if I could interrupt for a minute. You mentioned the arbitrary and capricious standard that's been used by the circuits, and that's under 49 U.S.C. 44902, I take it.
Yes, sir.
Okay. But the preemption issue, the full preemption issue, wasn't raised in many of those cases. I guess I'm back to the fact that if in fact that provision has been violated, do you not have a remedy in federal court?
Your Honor, I will say that many cases involving federal claims for discrimination do get dismissed for various reasons in federal court. Do the plaintiffs in this case have some kind of a claim that they could have possibly pursued in federal court? Perhaps they did, but they made a choice to stick with state court claims because they wanted to have this matter heard in state court instead of federal court. So is there possibly a claim that they could have pursued under federal law? Maybe there is. But they're not required to, and it doesn't necessarily mean that their discrimination claims have to be dismissed. So what we have here is kind of a two separate standards. We're proposing one standard. Sun Country is proposing a different one. Sun Country's argument is that It doesn't matter what the basis was for the safety concern. It doesn't matter what actually happened, as long as the airline, kind of shouts the word safety while they decide to remove a passenger. All of a sudden, any discrimination claim pursuant to state law is going to be dismissed.
Lederman, do you agree that federal case law establishes that the area of airline safety is an area that's occupied by federal law, and any state laws that are inconsistent with that are preempted, or that there's implied preemption in the area of airline safety?
We don't dispute that general presumption, sure.
So wouldn't resolution of your claims depend on whether the conduct at issue, the reason for the plaintiffs being required to leave the plane was related to safety or some other reason?
Your Honor, some country can certainly make that argument, but if their claim is that my client's skin color caused them a safety concern and for that reason they threw them out of the plane, that sort of claim is not preempted. If they had a safety concern because passengers are allowed, we have various cases that Sun Country actually cites to support its arguments, but in each of those cases there was an actual, some sort of factual basis to support the safety concern. So we have the Chaffee case that Sun Country cites involving a passenger with a dog who the dog was out of the carrier and caused some kind of commotion on the plane. We have a factual basis there to support the safety concern. The Montalvo case versus Spirit Airlines, this is the second main case Sun Country uses. It dealt with a negligence claim pertaining to physical injuries that arise when passengers are sitting in seats. Not really relevant, but I'll note about that case that there was a separate claim in that case regarding seating configuration. And that was preemption did not apply in that case because the court ruled, and I'll quote, that there was no factual basis on which to judge the effect of any seating reconfiguration. So because there was no factual basis supported, that claim was not preempted. We have the register case that Sun Country heavily cites. Again, that case involved a verbal altercation with a flight attendant. So once again, we have some kind of a factual basis to support the safety concern. And then the Mercer case, which is the last case that they cite, there was a dispute in that case where a passenger attempted to carry on what appeared to be beyond the limit for carry-on baggage. There was a two-item limit, and the passenger tried to carry on three items, and they had a dispute. So each of these cases that even Sun Country cites in this appeal had some kind of even a minimal basis to support the safety concern that the flight crew had. And that's completely missing in this case. We don't have any of that. All we have is that three African-American men came into first class. Only Black people were ordered to be removed. They didn't do anything. There's no factual basis to support that they were being disruptive or argumentative, or that they had dogs, or that they had more baggage as in these other cases. And given where we are on Rule 12, our view is that it was improper to dismiss this claim without some discovery to determine whether Sun Country flight crew was afraid of their skin color or afraid of something else.
Counsel, can I interrupt just for a minute? It seems to me that the case law that you're citing here goes to, again, to 49 U.S.C. 44902, which is to say an analysis of whether what happened there was arbitrary and capricious, and may very well have been. But if there's full preemption, which really wasn't analyzed very well in those cases, isn't Judge Frazier right when he suggests that in the end, even if it was just race-based, if there's full preemption on the safety issue, it's up to the federal courts to sort this out?
Your Honor, no, that's not correct, because there are plenty of cases, and some of which we have cited, which reject this argument as well. And so the Schwerat case, this is the district court case, dealt with a similar issue, whether there was a sufficient basis to preempt a state court discrimination claim The court decided there wasn't. And the second case is Al-Asadi.
Counsel, in that case, the court didn't decide the issue of implied preemption, which was the basis for the district court's decision here, as I understand it. But correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that in the Skirat case, the court expressly said that it wasn't deciding implied preemption.
Right. That may be correct, Your Honor, but still, the issue here is whether a plaintiff who is discriminated against can pursue a state court discrimination claim, and whether that should be thrown out automatically because there is some preemption based on federal law. We're not arguing with the principle of preemption. We're arguing with the fact that you can't just throw cases out based on the fact that somebody is afraid of somebody else's skin color.
Is it your position then that the motion should have been brought at the summary judgment phase rather than at on the pleadings?
Your Honor, I don't take a position on when some countries should have brought their motion, that they can bring a Rule 12 motion or a Rule 56 motion. Our position is that it was improper for the district court to dismiss this case given the fact that there is zero factual basis to support the safety issue. You know, if the plaintiffs didn't use the word safety in their complaint, then there would be no basis to dismiss this case. It doesn't make any sense that since there's no factual basis to support their safety concern, we can dismiss this case on Rule 12. On summary judgment, it would have been more appropriate to consider these issues. But again, there would have been the same issue at that point as well, whether there is some kind of a factual dispute as to whether or not there was a legitimate safety concern, or if they were afraid of their skin color and they threw them out for that reason.
I just want to make sure that I'm understanding your argument. Is your argument that before a district court can conclude that the field has been preempted by federal law, by the FAA, the court has to make a determination about the legitimacy of the safety concern that has been raised in a plaintiff's complaint? Is that your argument?
Our argument, Your Honor, is that the court has to first determine if there was an actual safety concern. And in this case, it's impossible to do that given the allegation of the complaint. I'll also note the district court somehow determined that the court didn't have to interpret the situation based on the plaintiff's view that they were discriminated against based on their skin color, but at the same time, the district court didn't seem to have any trouble concluding that there was a safety concern here.
Okay, and just to follow up on my question, in the setting of a Rule 12, how is a district court under your proposal supposed to make a determination about the legitimacy of a safety concern? I'm just wondering, you know, in a real practical sense, how that would work.
In a practical sense, Your Honor, the court should look to the complaint and see whether the complaint is sufficient to establish that there was a legitimate safety concern. Or on the other hand, whether the complaint shows that there was no safety concern and that these men were discriminated against. And so if there was more facts to support the safety concern alleged in the complaint, then perhaps the district court could have made a decision. For example, if the complaint alleged that the plaintiff showed up with a dog in the plane and the dog was barking and being let loose, like in this, with the Shafi case, at that point, there would have been a factual basis to decide whether or not there was an actual safety concern. It's not really about deciding whether the safety concern was legitimate at this point. I'm talking about deciding whether or not there was one in the first place. And in this case, there is no safety concern besides the fact that the staff on the airline said that there was. In addition to the two Minnesota cases, Your Honors, we do cite a number of cases from California, which also reach the same conclusion that that you can't just rely on this word safety to decide that preemption applies, that there's more to it, and that if a passenger is being discriminated against, you can't use safety to decide that those cases will be preempted. And those cases are the Abu Jude case versus British Airways, Chem versus Virgin America, Boya versus United, and Chowdhury versus Northwest Airlines. Same thing as here, In all those cases, there were state court discrimination claims being pursued. The airlines argue that they were preempted under federal law. And in all four of these cases, the courts decided the claims should go forward, either because there wasn't enough discovery to make a decision yet on the preemption issue, or because there was a dispute as to whether or not this was discrimination versus a legitimate safety concern. So I don't have any other comment on that issue. With regards to whether the Human Rights Act should apply, Your Honors, I agree that there is a general presumption against applying Minnesota statutes outside the state borders. But this is a unique situation. We have Minnesota residents who are trying to return home to Minnesota using a Minnesota airline. Sun Country is organized here in Minnesota. And so given these specific facts and given the Human Rights Act's policy provisions about ensuring that residents of this state are free from discrimination, our view is that the Human Rights Act should apply given the unique facts in this case. Unless Your Honors have any questions, that's all I have.
Any further questions?
No.
All right, thank you very much. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent, you can proceed when you're ready. I think you need to unmute, sir.
May it please the court, this is perhaps one of those unusual situations in which this court is not called upon to determine the contours of Minnesota public policy in an MHRA case. And there are two reasons why. First, Minnesota law isn't really relevant because the real question before the court, as I think the court has noted, is whether there is a federal policy that supersedes it through the doctrine of preemption. And second, even if the MHRA claim weren't preempted, the events alleged in the complaint all happened in California, and Minnesota law and public policy does not govern conduct that occurs entirely outside the state's territorial limits. Now, with respect to the preemption issue, federal law is the supreme law of the land, and the entirety of preemption doctrine arises from that constitutional precept. Now, some country has asserted a specific type of preemption, implied field preemption, which really isn't squarely addressed in any of the cases upon which these plaintiffs purport to rely. An implied field preemption applies when federal law so thoroughly occupies a legislative field as to make reasonable the inference that Congress left no room for the states to supplement it. And aviation safety is one such field, as has been held by fully half of the regional United States Courts of Appeals. And judges, I'm not aware of a decision of a federal court of appeals on the other side of that. Now, 49 U.S.C. section 44902 is a specific legislative grant of authority to air carriers to exclude passengers whom they determine may be inimical to safety. And when a passenger alleges that that federal authority has been employed as a pretext for unlawful discrimination, that claim must be brought under federal law. And as the cases plaintiffs themselves rely upon demonstrate, there are available federal causes of action that these plaintiffs forewent. They apply under Title 42, United States Code, Section 1981. As amended by the Civil Rights Act of 1991, which protects the rights of all persons within the jurisdiction of the United States to have the same right in every state and territory to make and enforce contracts, and also under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, specifically Title 42, United States Code, Section 2000B. To allow 50 different states, 50 different glosses on the interplay between an air carrier's right to remove a passenger for safety reasons and that passenger's own rights, risks creating a patchwork of state laws that would create a, quote, crazy quote effect, as the Ninth Circuit observed in the Montalvo case that is cited in our brief. As also observed in that case, Congress could not have reasonably intended an airline on a Providence to Baltimore to Miami flight to conform its conduct to different requirements in each different jurisdiction. Now, with respect to the procedural posture in which this case is presented, of course, this matter came before the district court on a motion under Rule 12.02E to dismiss for failure to state a claim. As a result, some country has not had an opportunity to deny the plaintiff's allegations. But I can assure you, if it had such an opportunity, if such an opportunity had been procedurally appropriate, some country would deny those allegations in the strongest terms. Now, if the court were to agree with Mr. Lederman that because the complaint is so thin on the particular nature of the contemporaneously expressed safety concern, that further proceedings in the district court are warranted, the next procedural step in the district court would be that some country would file an answer. And that answer would controvert the allegations of the complaints. Actually, I suppose two answers, because we have two civil actions below. But they would controvert the allegations of the complaints, and they would assert Sun Country's right under federal law to exclude passengers whom they determine are inimical to safety. And then Sun Country would have the right under Rule 12.03 to file a motion for judgment on the pleadings, as was done in Register versus United Airlines, which is cited in our brief.
Mr. Sherman, is this case distinguishable, as Mr. Lederman argues, because in Sheffley, Register, and Mercer, there were more specific allegations to support a safety concern, whereas in this case, there really aren't any specific allegations to support a safety concern?
Your Honor, I don't think it is distinguishable if you look at what the courts, particularly in Mercer and Register, said. In Mercer, the court determined the dismissal was appropriate where safety was, and I quote, was the apparent basis, end quote, for removal. Based on the allegations of plaintiff's own complaints, safety is the apparent basis for the removal because that is the explanation that plaintiffs were given when they were removed from the aircraft in Los Angeles.
So, Mr. Sherman, if plaintiffs had not made the allegation in their complaint about safety, would your position here be different? Would you not have an argument about failed preemption?
Well, Your Honor, I think what would have happened in that circumstance, if all explanation for the removal had been omitted by the plaintiffs from their complaints, Sun Country would have answered, would have proffered the basis for the removal, would have moved for judgment on the pleadings under Rule 12.03, and I think Judge Frazier would have been constrained to grant that motion. We would be before Your Honors in this appeal. And of course, the standard to be applied under Rule 12.03 with respect to not looking outside the four corners of the pleadings for facts would be the same. So I think, Your Honor, there would have been perhaps one more procedural step, but it's not one that would have taken very long or changed the outcome. I wanted the court to note, counsel relied on the Williams case out of the Second Circuit from 1975. I agree with counsel that in that case and others since, particularly there's a case out of the Fourth, out of the First Circuit, the ruling, which escapes me. I think, oh, here it is, Sequoia versus American Airlines, 520 F3rd, 1 First Circuit, where the federal courts have developed how Section 44902 is to be applied. I agree. Both cases indicate that it's the arbitrary and capricious standard. But in Williams, there was no issue of preemption raised. There was a federal claim present in the case. And the Goodspeed case, cited in our brief, decided 36 years later by the Second Circuit, was the first time I'm aware of that the Second Circuit squarely held that the Federal Aviation Act preempts the entire field of aviation safety.
Counsel, I just have a question that kind of goes to the argument of the appellant, and that is this. As long as your client suggests safety in this case, or another airline suggests safety, to remove passengers on what might be a very outrageous basis, it has nothing to do with safety, but as long as they can claim safety, it's your position they can never go into state court or follow a state court claim. Is that right? Even if safety had nothing to do with the cause for removal?
Yes, Your Honor, that is my client's position, that if safety is a basis for the removal of a passenger from an aircraft.
Even if it's pretextual?
Even if it's pretextual, as I think Mercer and Register make clear. In Mercer, I believe it was in Mercer that the court admonished the parties in its memorandum opinion that they missed the point of preemption, that because safety was an issue in the case, the entire question of pretext is one that had to be presented in the context of a federal claim. And that's, I think, the proposition that Chaffee, Mercer, and Register stand for.
No, and I understand that, just as a follow-up. I understand that it has to be arguably as part of a federal claim, but there are no parameters then for removal of passengers as long as the airline claims a basis that would lead to federal preemption, like safety, even when safety is not related at all to the removal.
Well, I think
in terms of state court, in terms of state court claims, now I'm talking about, not federal claims.
I think that's right. I think the only standards are ones that federal law affords, including under the Air Carrier Access Act, which prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, color, national origin, religion, sex, and ancestry in federal air transportation, and the causes of action afforded by 42 U.S.C. 1981 and Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. If safety is an issue in the case, those are the claims that are available to the plaintiffs, and that's the way the case must be presented to avoid dismissal. With respect to the
counsel, I have a follow-up. What if the allegation in the complaint was that the claim of safety was arbitrary and capricious?
Well, I mean, that would just be an articulation of the federal standard to be applied, weighing Section 44902 against the private right of action afforded, in Title 42 of the United States Code, either under Section 1981 or Section 2000D. For the court to pass upon that would have to be done in the context of a federal claim under the cases we've cited.
Thank you.
On the extraterritoriality issue, there are no cases applying the MHRA to public accommodations discrimination that occurs entirely outside the state's territorial limits. There have been, the Susanna's case is, I think, illustrative. You have a California citizen, California-bound passenger held to lack any claim under the California UNRRA Civil Rights Act for an incident that took place on the ground in Detroit, Michigan. The Chaplin case as well, out of the Northern District of California, Federal District Court, a California citizen, California-bound passenger, had no claim under California statute for removal from a bus in Texas. Now here we have Minnesota citizen passengers, Minnesota-bound, but all the allegations of the complaint occurred exclusively on the grounds of the Los Angeles International Airport in California. Thus, the NHRA does not apply. And unless there are any questions, Sun Country urges affirmance of the judgments below.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Lederman, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, I'm reading from Shafi. This is the very last paragraph of that case that deals specifically with this preemption issue. And this is, again, the case that's cited by Sun Country. Here's what it says. Federal law occupies the entire field of aviation safety, okay? So the issue here is safety. And so what does safety mean? Does it mean having a disruptive dog on the airplane? It probably does. Does it mean arguing with flight staff? It probably does. Does it mean bringing more luggage than you're allowed to? It probably does that as well as in some of these other cases. If the court looks to our complaints, the only reasonable interpretation given the Rule 12 standard is that the safety issue here was the plaintiff's skin color, okay? And so if we're going to define safety as a person's skin color, then sure, Sun Country gets to have this case dismissed. But we can't do that because a person's skin color is not a safety issue. It's not a safety concern. And we cannot define the term safety as simply being based on someone's skin color. The issue in this case, even if we adopt all of the arguments by Sun Country with these implied preemption arguments, but even if we look to their case law, the court still had to make a decision as to whether or not there was a safety concern.
Okay, so I have a hypothetical for you, Mr. Lederman.
Yes,
so same complaint, but no reference to the skin color of the plaintiffs. Is it a safety issue or is it not?
Your Honor, if we had the same complaint with no reference to skin color, then there wouldn't be a legal claim to pursue at that point because they're making a discrimination claim based on their race. So if they weren't claiming that they were discriminated against based on their skin color, then I don't know what kind of claim they could have pursued at that point. There has to be some kind of underlying cause of action to sue Sun Country. And so if they didn't allege that they were thrown out because of their skin color, then I don't know what kind of claim they would have at that point. So what I was saying, Your Honors, is that in order for the district court to make this ruling, the district court had to decide that there was either a safety concern or that there was a race concern. And reading the complaints in light most favorable to the plaintiffs, as the district court should have done, the district court was obligated to hold that this was a race concern and not a safety concern. And even if we look at all the case law cited by Sun Country and everything that was discussed during oral arguments today, the district court still made a mistake at this stage of litigation to dismiss this case. And Sun Country's claims here today, and they made the same things, the same claim to district court that, yeah, sure, we have a legitimate concern and we would have provided that if we had to. Well, I haven't seen that legitimate concern. And when these claims were filed, they didn't do anything to provide that to us. So if they have if they want to come here and talk about the fact that they have some kind of a concern, which is irrelevant at this point, then they should have at least provided that to the plaintiffs after they received notice that they were pursuing these discrimination claims. Based on the Rule 12 standard, Your Honors, and based on the fact that the district court ignored that standard, and rather than seeing this as a race issue, which it is per the complaint, it decided this is a safety issue, the cases should be remanded back for further proceedings. Unless the court has questions, I don't have anything else.
I don't think there are any further questions, so thank you very much for your argument, Mr. Lederman, and Mr. Sherman, thank you for your argument. We will look very closely at this case, and the matter is submitted. We will issue our decision within the 90-day statutory timeframe.
All right, thank you.